Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Sports Tonight on BSL Radio. Join Rob Shields and Mike Weber as they talk about the Baltimore Orioles, Baltimore Ravens, University of Maryland Terrapins, and more. Be part of the show. Call us at 347-215-8391.
Welcome to Sports Tonight with Rob and Mike. Tonight, no Rob, though, so I guess we'll have fewer coughs. We have in his place Brian McGuire, who is otherwise known as Pedro Serrano on Baltimore Sports and Life. Hey, how's it going, Brian?
Hey, how you doing, man?
Not too bad. So, Brian, obviously we're going to be talking NBA. Both of us are pretty big NBA fans. So that's our topic tonight. We're going to recap the first half of the year, you know, get into some playoff predictions, awards talk. Let's talk about the Wizards, which is your favorite team. Maybe, just maybe, we'll get a little bit into the Lakers, which, you know, both of us root for. But that's a pretty sad situation, so I don't know about that. But this is your chance to shine, Brian. I know you've been lobbying Chris Stoner, the Baltimore Sports and Life owner, for this prestigious job of being able to host a show, so you know, don't let the many fans of this show let down tonight.
I'll try not to. I kind of feel like you going from Rob to me is sort of like upgrading from Bill Russell to Wilt Chamberlain, so you should be in pretty good hands.
All right, well, hopefully. I mean, I guess that means the end results though are going to be worse, but in your free time, you're going to end up with many more ladies, I suppose.
Yeah, let's hope. Let's hope. If I could get to 10% of his number, that would be pretty successful, I would say. But let's move on from the PG-13 plus rated aspects of this podcast.
Yeah, and I think 10% maybe shooting a little too high there. But I don't know. I don't know much about your your personal life there, Brian. But anyway. All right, so let's get into, you know, the first half of the season, some of the main storylines. You know, let's actually just start off with, you know, we have a couple storylines from All-Star Weekend. The first thing was that has apparently become a big story is Kevin Durant is, like, you know, kind of pissed at the media, and, you know, everyone's making this huge deal about it because normally he's, like, you know, a pretty nice guy, at least on the surface. But mm-hmm. He basically told the media they don't know Jack, just to say it in a more polite way. And this is a guy that, you know, you're hoping comes to Washington, D.C. In the near future.
Right.
So, yeah, any thoughts there on this weird Kevin Durant situation? Plus, Westbrook has had similar situations with the media. So you got the two Thunder stars kind of, you know, going off on the media the last few weeks.
Well, I guess what I wonder is, was there a specific quote from a media member he was referring to, or was it just the overall kind of thought process that he didn't deserve to be an all-star? I'm not really sure. And I hope that this isn't Russ kind of rubbing off on him, because, like a lot of people have said, this is pretty much out of character for him. He's normally a pretty soft-spoken guy. Doesn't tend to say a lot of controversial things. You know, the most notoriety he's really ever gotten in terms of a press conference was when he basically broke down at the MVP ceremony last year. So I was shocked to read what he said, but at the same time, I guess if you're kind of being told over and over again that you don't deserve it, and it's been a frustrating year for him with injuries, and right now his team is kind of out of the playoff picture, so he might have just reached a breaking point, and I'm kind of willing to chalk it up to that, where he just kind of lost it and flipped out, because we've all kind of been there in life. But based on his track record, I'm not ready to say right now that this is anything other than just kind of an isolated incident, and that's sort of how I took it.
Yeah, I don't really make that big of a deal of this type of stuff. In general, you know, everyone likes to talk about how they wish athletes would say more instead of go with the cliches. And then a lot of times when they do say more, they get in trouble for it. I mean, I would say, you know, Durant probably went a little overboard. I mean, he's right that some people in the media don't really know much of what they're talking about, but you know, there are obviously plenty that do as well. So it was excessive. I think the thing that really annoyed him was someone, you know, basically questioning Scott Brooks as the coach. And, you know, that's a big thing in the media. A big thing on Twitter is, like, there's a lot of anti-Scott Brooks talk. And, you know, I'm in agreement with a lot of that, but I think that's what really set him off.
Oh, okay. I thought it was the All-Star thing and about how he made the team and didn't necessarily deserve it because there are so many good players in the West. I thought that was what set him off. I didn't know it was Scott Brooks related.
Well, I think that was part of it, too, was the All-Star thing.
Okay, I mean, the West is an amazing conference. There are a ton of great players. And, you know, until the last minute, Damian Lillard, who's awesome, almost didn't look like he was going to play. So, I mean, and who should be an All-Star is a huge talking point for media members. I mean, for the most part, the All-Star game itself is just kind of a spectacle where guys fly around and dunk. And so when the league takes an entire week off, you need stuff to talk about. And I guess Durant, whether he deserved to be an All-Star or not, was one of the big things. And, you know, he's a proud guy. He's, you know, the reigning MVP, number two overall pick in the draft. And I'm sure he doesn't like hearing about stuff like that. And I'm sure he doesn't like hearing his coach getting called out when they haven't had a great year for a variety of reasons. And like I said, I think he just kind of snapped and let loose. I don't think he's issued an apology or anything. I don't think he got in trouble or fined or anything like that. And honestly, you know, as we go along into the second half of the season, I don't think that this will be something that people really remember or dwell on.
Yeah, I don't think it's a big deal. Yeah, like you're saying, this is a slow time right now in sports, so, you know, the media has to talk about something. I watched SportsCenter for a few minutes last night, and I was shocked. There was, like, a whole segment with Barry Melrose talking hockey, going over highlights.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. They gave him 2 whole minutes, huh?
It was. I think it was even longer than 2 minutes.
Wow. Wow.
Because, I mean, there's not much going on. I mean, they actually had Cesar Millan, the dog whisperer, on as well because of the dog show. So,
oh, my, are you kidding? They had him on?
I am not kidding. Yeah.
Was he breaking down the dog show and talking about a English setter's wins above replacement and stuff? Because that would be amazing. I would definitely watch that.
I mean, if so, I would be sad I missed that part. I didn't really see his analysis. But, yeah, it's desperate times there, I guess, for ESPN with you know, college basketball pretty much and hockey, the only things going on. So, yeah, all right, moving on from the Durant story, and we'll get into the Thunder some as we go over the playoff picture because, you know, they're right on the cusp of making the playoffs. So, you know, there wasn't too much else in terms of, like, interesting NBA storylines, I think, from the All-Star weekend. You know, just before the All-Star weekend, there was a little bit of an interesting thing with Charles Barkley and Daryl Morey, the Rockets GM.
Oh, boy. Yeah,
And I know we're on different sides, generally, of the sabermetrics or analytics or whatever. I mean, you get into that stuff to a degree. I'm into it more than you, obviously. And for those who don't know, like, Brian and I, you know, I guess it could be fair to maybe call us frenemies. I don't know. We don't get into it as much now as we used to, but we used to get into heated debates and so forth pretty frequently. So this is one reason why is because of the sabermetric thing. So any comments on that little argument between Daryl Morey and Charles Barkley?
Well, I do like that Barkley is free to speak his mind. I don't dismiss advanced stats completely in any sport, really. I don't fully, I guess, understand them or appreciate them or apply them as much as some folks do when it comes to talking about sports. I do use PER a lot, especially when my one friend who's a Bulls fan defends Scottie Pippen, who I also think is overrated. I happen to mention that Pippen's PER stinks, and then I get, well, it doesn't take defense into account, and we go back and forth on that. But honestly, I fall somewhere probably in the middle. You can't just dismiss it completely, but Barkley, if you look at what he said just on a you know, non-deep level, he's right. I mean, you can have all the advanced stats you want, but if you don't have good players, you're not going to win much. And if you look at any team that's ever won a title in the history of the league, they've had, you know, except maybe Detroit in 2004, they've had, you know, at least one or two superstars on their team. So, you know, I don't want to sit here and say that guys like Daryl Morey don't have any idea what they're talking about and they need to open up a calculus book or whatever, because I do think a lot of what they put into it will prove to be fruitful, but they kind of go hand in hand. It's like with wins above replacement. Generally, the really great players have the highest wins above replacement. So if you're saying, I want to have great players, and you load up your team with James Harden and Dwight Howard, it's not going to be too surprising when you're 36-17 because, yeah, the advanced stats told you that these players were good and you have good players on your team. So, you know, it's kind of six of one, half dozen of the other, in my opinion. And that's, you know, but I did enjoy the back and forth. I enjoy any kind of back and forth with Charles Barkley because, unlike a lot of analysts who, you know, they try to protect their job or whatever and try to be as politically correct as possible, Barkley will just say whatever he thinks. And he pissed off someone else earlier this week, too, who said, you know, I don't respect him or something. But it's always interesting to hear.
Yeah, I like Charles Barkley a lot as an analyst. You know, I'm, you know, as I said, more into the advanced stats than you are and a lot of people are. But I still think he offers a lot of great insight into basketball. And basketball, I think, more so than baseball, you know, you can really get into stuff without really getting too much into the stats. But, you know, with that said, and, you know, just onto what you were saying, I actually think, you know, I think Scottie Pippen's a better player than you think. I think Bill Russell's a better player than you think. So I'm the bigger PER guy, but, you know, so I guess somewhat ironically, it's not, I don't just go with the PER there. I think those two guys are better than how you feel about them. But, you know, in terms of the needing players, well, obviously you need players. I mean, I think what Barkley was saying there, yeah, he's right. But Daryl Morey and no one else is arguing against that. It's kind of a, you know, a straw man argument. Daryl Morey, you know, went on this great quest to try to get superstars. That he basically was going all in during the years leading up to getting Harden and then Dwight Howard to try to get that superstar. He was trying to acquire, you know,
Bosh,
middling,
yeah,
now Bosh recently, but and that he missed out on that. But yeah, he basically tried to get all these smaller assets, mid tier assets, and you know maybe trade like, you know, a decent asset for a slightly better asset, and then just continuously get better assets in and then clear cap space in order to be able to try to make that run for James Harden, which they made. And by the way, at that time, James Harden was not universally considered a superstar by any means. James Harden was, you know, he was a very good player, a very young player, so you could certainly project growth there, but he came off the bench for the Thunder, and, you know, if you looked at his stats, just like his traditional stats, they weren't anything amazing because partially, you know, he didn't play a lot of minutes, and he was, again, very young, and he had two other guys taking a bunch of shots on that team. So, you know.
I mean, I guess is what you're describing in terms of how Morey built this team, is that something you learn from advanced stats, or is that just called being a good GM? You know,
well, it's probably a combination.
Pieces.
I think a lot of the getting the pieces, like the some undervalued assets previous to James Harden, I think some of that, a lot of the analytics went into that, getting like a guy like Kyle Lowry, who wasn't really that valued at the time, and then being able, and he may have actually traded him too soon, but, you know, trading him for more than what he, you know, dealt to get him in the first place. And then again, James Harden, I think he valued James Harden more than most of the league. And, you know, some of that's just being a good GM, some of just scouting, and then some of his analytics. It's always a combination. I think some people at times try to make this type of stuff into, like, way too black and white of, like, all right, you're just all analytics or you're all scouting or whatever, all eye test. It's, you know, for some people it can be. And there's, I would say there's probably more people on the all eye test or scouting side. Because anyone who's seriously in this business isn't just solely going to be using the numbers, I don't think. But there are people like the Charles Barkleys who just completely dismiss the analytics, apparently.
Yeah, well, I mean, if they used advanced stats and metrics to find market inefficiencies, and that's a reason why they got James Harden and no one else did, then that's a huge argument against what Barkley is saying. Because it's easy to sit there if you're Barkley and say, yeah, just load up on good players. Well, how are you going to do that? The cap and the CBA only lets you, you know, do so much in terms of just offering guys, you know, max deals. So in a way, you need to be able to find the guys that you don't necessarily pay the most for, but give you more bang for your buck. And, hey, I don't know a lot about all these advanced stats, but if Houston truly had something drawn up that said, hey, this Harden guy, you know, he's going to end up being a top five player in the league, we should go get him now, then kudos to them for sure.
Yeah. All right. So anything else in the All-Star weekend that you care to talk about?
No, I really enjoyed the three-point contest. I kind of had hoped that Klay Thompson would have given Steph Curry a little bit more of a challenge in the final round because that would have been a lot of fun. Didn't really care about the dunk contest at all, and the skill competition is just stupid. So, but I enjoyed the three-point shootout, and Zach LaVine is a genetic freak who can do probably a million things athletically that I can't. So congrats to him.
Yeah, I largely agree with what you're saying. He put on a good show, the NBA, on the dunk competition. Oladipo had one really great dunk, I think. But overall, yeah, it's I guess not what it once was. I mean, that's a popular thing to say. And, someone, to give him credit, Brandon Nickel on the message board, someone that, you know, is contentious.
Who's
on
that?
There,
okay. I've never heard of him.
Yeah, he did mention that, you know, these guys, it's just the level of difficulty now with a lot of these dunks is just so much higher than it used to be because they can't just do dunks people already did before. People would just be like, oh, been there, done that. So they're trying ridiculously hard dunks, and then that leads to more misses, which is kind of, you know, a letdown and all that. But, you know, whatever. It's an event that, like, is pretty good if you DVR'd it, and then you can fast-forward through a lot of it. But, yeah, if you were just watching...
That's what I did, because the Maryland game was on, so I was able to fast-forward past a lot of the junk, a lot of the singing performances or whatever, but the highlight for me was definitely the three-point shootout, and whether that says a lot about the weekend as a whole, I don't know, but for me, I enjoyed that the most.
Yeah, it's good for what it is, but... You know, obviously it would be nice to have more defense in an All-Star game and so on and so forth. But anyway, let's talk a little bit about the first half of the season. Really, it's more than a half by now. But anyway, some of the main storylines, obviously, the Atlanta Hawks, you know, basically becoming the second or so best team in the NBA, which, you know, is a complete surprise. We were on the show right when the season started, along with Rob and Seth, and I think I may have been the highest on the Hawks, but that's not to really, you know, brag, because I didn't think they were, like, anything great. I thought they were a team that, you know, would make the playoffs pretty easily, most likely, would, you know, be in that five range, but they're amazing. So, what are your thoughts on them, and do you think they're legit?
Well, I'm angry at them because I really thought coming into this year that this would be the chance for the Wizards to finally win a division title. And I know that winning the division is not really a huge thing or whatever, but when you haven't won one since 1979, it's pretty pathetic. And I thought once LeBron left Miami, I said, great, the division is wide open because Orlando stinks. The Hornets, you know, they have solid players, but, you know, I don't think they're anything special. Miami, they're going to regress. I thought actually probably the Heat would be their biggest challenge still, but I didn't see this Atlanta thing coming, not by a long shot. I mean, they're 43-11, man. If I told you on Halloween that Atlanta was going to be 43-11 at the All-Star break, you would have had me committed. But pretty much anything that could have gone right for them has. I mean, Kyle Korver is putting together, you know, the greatest shooting season in the history of the league. Jeff Teague has emerged. I mean, would you say Jeff Teague is a top 10 point guard now?
Yes.
Yeah. So he's emerged. Millsap and Horford, especially Horford, there's always going to be kind of those injury questions or whatever. But, you know, so far this year, he's, you know, managed to stay on the floor. But you're always, I guess, kind of holding your breath and hoping he can stay out there. And with Budenholzer, I mean, clearly the Popovich system and whatever sort of knowledge he instilled into him works. Now, all that being said, you know, would you take the Hawks as the East favorite right now, despite all their success? Because I don't think I would.
I think I would, but it's close. I mean, it's between them and Cleveland mostly for me, and I do consider Chicago as well, even though, you know, they haven't been overly impressive this season. I think Chicago has a lot of upside. If, you know, Derrick Rose, I think, you know, I don't know, I'm not going to count on him at all in terms of improvement, but he could at least maybe kind of calm down on how much he is dominating the offense if he's not going to improve, and, you know, use Gasol and Butler more, and that could help. And, you know, I think there's just a lot of talent on that team. So it's close, but I am a huge fan of what Atlanta's doing. And we saw, obviously, last year with the Spurs versus the Heat, that a team that has that Spurs system could easily, you know, defeat a team like the Heat, which is, you know, Miami is, you know, obviously has differences, but is in the same mold, you know, more of a superstar-based team. And by the way, you mentioned the Pistons as a team that, you know, didn't have the superstar. Really, the Spurs last year didn't have a superstar. They had a lot of stars.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Not, I mean, Duncan will end up being remembered as a superstar, but he certainly wasn't a superstar player last year. So, yeah, that is a good point.
Yeah, so I think Atlanta... Oh, go ahead.
I was just saying, in terms of Atlanta, you know, one of the funny things I keep hearing, and I don't know who came up with this, but people keep saying, and I hear this on different stations, well, I don't like Atlanta because, you know, if the game's on the line and you need to make a shot, you know, who are you going to go to? And it's like, maybe the guy having the best shooting season in the history of the league. Like, I know Kyle Korver is not a sexy name or whatever, but I have no problem him taking a final shot in the game if it, you know, meant advancing in a playoff series. So I guess the point they're trying to make is that they don't have a legit go-to superstar either. But much like the Spurs last year, they have a ton of very, very good players that all seem to play well together. And when they're going well, I mean, they're tough to beat for sure.
Yeah, I get annoyed with, you know, that thought process in terms of being applied to the Hawks here, because a lot of NBA teams in the last, you know, few minutes of a close game will resort to, like, basically hero ball. And that's, you know, part of the reason why the NBA gets, like, the ISO rep. Like, it's so much more isolation play than college basketball, which I don't think is quite true. But in the last few minutes, it often is. And, you know, you end up with a team with, you know, a star player, and you just, especially if it's a perimeter-oriented player, you just give him the ball, and then he just basically does just about everything that last few minutes. I mean, you and I have seen that with Kobe Bryant quite a bit. You know, I think it originates with MJ for the most part, and, you know, you see it a lot. So, but that's not super effective. I think it's more effective if you have a Spurs or a Hawks that isn't just going to be like, all right, hey, you, this guy, you're just going to get the ball and probably end up taking a difficult shot towards the end of the shot clock. It's better if you actually have guys that are, you know, going to just run their offense, assuming it's a very well-run offense, which the Hawks have, and you end up with the best shot that way. So, yeah, you're not going to give the ball to Kyle Korver and just be like, oh, make something happen, Kyle. That would be dumb. But he might end up, you know, getting an open three-pointer, and he's obviously very prone to make those shots. And if he doesn't get an open three-pointer, that means someone is guarding him closely and is allowing a guy like Teague, Horford, or Millsap to get more space and allow them to have a better look.
Yeah, I mean, and going back to what you said about the East teams, I mean, I'm torn between Cleveland and Chicago in terms of who I would make the odds-on favorite to represent the East in the NBA Finals. Cleveland's obviously played a lot better recently. I don't know if this whole LeBron, Kevin Love sort of beef or whatever finally got resolved, or if that was a bigger issue than we thought. But They're 8-2 in their last 10 games. The Bulls, I keep kind of waiting for them to sort of put it all together. You know, like they're hot, they're cold, they're hot, they're cold, and you know Jimmy Butler has kind of calmed down since his hot start. But I think if they're all healthy heading into the playoffs, I still picture them as being a pretty tough out. And you know, sorry Wizards fans, sorry Raptors fans, but I don't really envision them as. I mean, they're going to be a tough team to beat in any series, but I can't see them winning three series in the playoffs and going to the NBA Finals for a variety of reasons.
Yeah, I agree. The Wizards and the Raptors, both solid teams. The Wizards have, you know, been slipping a bit of late, but yeah, I just don't see the upside with those two teams, unless, you know, they make some sort of move here before the trade deadline. But I don't see the upside with those two teams compared to the upside of the Bulls and the Cavs, and then what we're already seeing with the Hawks. Anything could happen, but the NBA is much less prone to upsets than, you know, the NFL or Major League Baseball, obviously. So, you know, 7-game series, it's very unlikely that the Wizards even make it to the Eastern Conference Finals. Like, I would predict them to not even make it out of the first round at this point, because I think they're probably going to be the 5 seed. It's possible they could go to the 6 seed, actually. Milwaukee, not really talked about, is playing some very solid basketball.
Hot heading into the All-Star break, too. We've talked about the 5 kind of quote-unquote elite teams in the East: Atlanta, the Bulls, Cleveland, Toronto, and Washington. And one of them is going home in the first round. And it looks like, you know, the Wizards obviously aren't going to win their division. So they're going to have to either have the best second-place record and get the 4 seed, or they're going to go on the road. And if they have to go on the road to any of Toronto, Washington, or Cleveland, I don't like their chances. If I had to put money on one of those 5 teams losing in the first round, it would probably be the Wizards, as much as it pains me to say that. But, you know, there's just – I don't see as much great play from them, particularly against the elite teams in the league, as I do those other 4.
Agreed. So do you want to get into that for a moment here? And you're the one who watches a lot more Wizards basketball here. So what do you think their issues are?
All right. Well, one, the offense tends to stagnate. And a lot of times, particularly when they were going through that rough stretch probably a week or so ago, I want to say, where they lost to the Hornets twice in pretty much a week. And the Hornets, you know, the Hornets are an underrated defensive team, but the offense kind of stagnates. Wallace talked about how his jump shooting has improved, but it's still not as good as it needs to be. Bradley Beal, you know, he has issues creating his own shot. He's a hell of a shooter, but doesn't put the ball on the floor enough, and basically needs Wall to kind of create for him. I've been very happy with Pierce. Gortat, I don't know what to make of this guy, because they gave him that massive contract, and he doesn't even play in the fourth quarter a lot, which absolutely blows my mind. And I don't know if that's Randy Whitman or, you know, Ernie Grunfeld saying that or whatever, but if you have him as your top paid big man, why isn't he in there late in games? And I haven't checked the minutes that he plays in the fourth quarter, but I guarantee you it would really surprise you. Defensively, I mean, I don't have a whole lot of issues with how they played defense so far this year. There tends to be lapses, but with what NBA team are there not defensive lapses? But in a nutshell, you know, my biggest issue has kind of been how the offense can get into these funks, and it's just really, really frustrating to watch when you've got Nene not hitting his shots and he'll shoot anything you want. Tarifin comes off the bench. He's a complete black hole when he gets the ball. Time for Andre Miller to retire. I think if they make any sort of move at all, it's going to be for backup point guard before the deadline. So, I mean, is that enough bad things?
that qualifies. And, yes, backup point guard does seem to be a need there.
Garrett Temple at this point is playing backup point guard over Andre Miller. So that tells you all you need to know about how they view him.
Yeah. And I think you're right about, you know, complaining more about the offense and the defense. in terms of efficiency, they're 14th in offense, 5th in defense, so the defense actually quite strong. The Gortat situation is interesting. I guess, you know, they basically choose Nene over him and then decide they want more spacing from the other big, which I guess they deem Chris Humphreys to be able to provide more spacing than Gortat. And Humphreys is a nice rebounder. But that seems to be the main choice there in this, pace and space era that we're in, is Chris Humphreys is more of, like, I guess, a stretch four, but even though he's not, you know, so much of one.
Well, then I guess the question is if that was going to be your philosophy, why would you give Gortat this big contract? You know, it's just – and when I sit in my section, I hear people comment on this, you know. Why isn't Gortat in there? Why did we pay him the money that we did? And, you know, the Washington media is not exactly, you know, this hotbed, you know, nail a guy to a cross sort of thing that you might see in New York or whatever. But it would be nice if they kind of asked Whitman that question every once in a while, because it's not like an isolated incident.
Yeah, very true. It is a little odd, but I guess so far a disappointing contract there for the Wizards. All right, so I guess we're pretty much in agreement on your team there, the Wiz, that, you know, unlikely to get out of the first round and definitely unlikely to win the East. And we're pretty much in agreement.
Yeah, I mean,
go ahead. Yeah, so I'm just basically saying I'm higher on Atlanta than you are, but we all agree that Atlanta, Chicago, and Cleveland are the main three teams. You know, Cleveland, the Kevin Love situation is interesting. This fit-in, fit-out thing, the tweet from LeBron, that came, you know, when they were winning. So that was an odd timing, and, you know, I don't think LeBron did a very good job there in terms of his leadership or whatever you want to call it. So that was odd. But
I think he's gone, by the way. I think Love is going to leave. I don't think he's going to be in Cleveland next year. That's my hot take. And look out for the Lakers. That's all I'll say. Is I guarantee they're going to do whatever they can to try to woo him out there. But I guess that's more. We can save that for our NBA off-season issue of Sports Night.
There you go. Yeah, he very well might leave. I mean, he said at the time he was going to stay, but that was before he got involved in the situation and got immersed in it. So now he doesn't seem to be enjoying it as much as he probably anticipated. And obviously the numbers are down. His role is not, you know, what he wants it to be and what it really, quite frankly, should be. So I can understand why he would be frustrated. The Lakers is an interesting option there. You know, if he's not enjoying his time with LeBron, I definitely question how much he would enjoy his time with Kobe, but, you know,
he'd only have to deal with Kobe for one more year.
Possibly.
Maybe. So,
possibly.
So, you know, that's something to keep in mind, but I definitely have visions of Kevin Love, lining up along next year with Goran Dragic, Wesley Johnson, Kobe Bryant, and Julius Randle. You know, that's a starting five that I don't have a huge issue with, but we don't necessarily have to dive deep into the Lakers right now because there are a million better things to talk about.
True. And, for anyone who hasn't seen it, Kobe did have a very compelling interview with Ahmad Rashad on NBA TV. It was like an hour long. So check that out. Learn more about the Black Mamba. So, all right, I guess we're good with the East. Anything else on the East?
No, just you know, Atlanta, you're really annoying. And if you could string together like a 15-game losing streak, that would really mean a lot to me, because I would like to at least have home court advantage in one playoff series. But it doesn't look like it's going to happen this year. So congratulations on catching the lightning in a bottle, and hopefully you sell out your arena for the playoffs, because Atlanta is a terrible sports town. And that's enough of my Atlanta bashing.
Well, I mean, they clearly deserve a good team with the great fan support and with the Danny Ferry and the ownership situation from the offseason.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, for sure.
Danny Ferry could be executive of the year, even though he's, like, been suspended for the whole season.
Yeah, is he done? Is he going to ever come back? Or is he – I mean, I think he's got to be finished, right? I mean,
I don't know. He's still on the payroll, so I don't know.
What a mess. And somehow they're the second best team in the league. Go figure.
Yeah. Well, you know, they got the great coach and the great philosophy going over there. I was, you know, I liked what they were doing. I just wasn't expecting this sort of, you know, amazingness this soon. But, all right, Western Conference. So
Mighty, Mighty West.
Yeah, the Golden State Warriors, they are the best team in the NBA. 42-9, and, you know, they're actually, you know, they're second in offense efficiency and first in defense. So they're just, you know, ridiculously good. They have a point margin of 10.9 a game. I mean, amazing outside shooting with Curry and Thompson, the Splash Brothers. You know, when Bogut gets healthy, you know, you have some rim protection.
Draymond Green emerging as a, you know, a really, really good player, almost quasi.
Yeah.
I mean, where did that come from?
I don't know, but he can pretty much do everything. He plays great defense. He can shoot the three. He's developed that. He's a good passer. You know, he's pretty much doing everything for him. And then you got Barnes as well, a solid player. Iguodala is a great defender. You know, that's a stacked team. I think I'm saying they're my favorite in the West. I picked them actually to finish first in the West in the regular season, but the Spurs to make it out of the West. But at this point, I'm sold on the Warriors.
Yeah, I mean, my pick at the beginning of the year was Houston. Ironically enough, going back to the Daryl Morey talk, but it's hard to pick against these guys right now. I mean, like you said, number one, what are they? Number one in D, number two in offense, or do I have that reversed?
No, that's right.
Okay, so I mean, you would normally say if a team was top five in both offense and the defensive efficiency, that they were a great team and probably capable of something special. The fact that they're top two in both, I mean, you need to put together a really compelling argument as to why you would possibly pick against them. I mean, they've got, like you said, incredible outside shooting. You know, the offense that they generate from their guards is second to none in this league. They've got the depth. They've got the bruisers and the guys that will do the dirty work. They play the awesome defense like you talked about. People seem to like Memphis after the Jeff Green trade, and I think the one thing that a lot of people are kind of giving Memphis credit for is that they present maybe a matchup problem because of Gasol and Randolph both down low. I mean, how do you think the Warriors would try to match up with them in a playoff series like that? Do you think that would possibly be an issue for them, or do you think, you know, they would figure out a way to get past it?
Oh, it's a concern. I mean, obviously you need Bogut, and, you know, Spates might get a little bit playing time along with Bogut. But, you know, because, you know, Draymond is a bit undersized, so if, you know, you have him against Zach, that's troublesome.
That would be a problem. It would definitely be a problem, I think.
Yeah, I agree. It's a problem. But I think, you know, if assuming the Warriors have home court, that's a very good home court advantage they have there. And, you know, I would still lean towards the Warriors, but that would be the matchup I think I would be most concerned about from their perspective, just because of that size advantage that Gasol and Zebo bring. You know, the Memphis, I still would like them to be a better outside shooting team for my taste, but that's otherwise. I mean, obviously Mike Conley is a very good point guard, and the Jeff Green addition is helpful. He's, you know, as you know, Bill Simmons likes to talk about, he's not a guy that you want to be like your top scorer, your top two guys, but as your number four, number five player, you know, he's a pretty good player, so that's helpful. I mean, it's a very good all-around team, for sure.
They brought him in, but I think they brought him in to try to help with that shooting issue, but he's only shooting 30% from three. So, I mean, they brought him in to do that, but so far this year, you know, he hasn't shot all that well, but he's only a 34% career three-point shooter. I mean, I'm convinced at this point to change my pick to Golden State just because they've got that amazing home court advantage, and add on top of that, I think talent-wise, they're the best team. But I think if they end up matching up with Memphis, it's going to be a very, very tough series for them. And if whoever wins the East doesn't have nearly as tough a time, look out, you know.
Yeah. And by the way, Memphis is 6th in defense and 11th in offense. So just in comparison to Golden State, not particularly close there, even though the records are reasonably close. But the playoffs are, you know, a matchup game, and they do present a problem for a lot of teams because a lot of teams have gone smaller, and Memphis has stayed with that big front line. But in general, I just like the way the Warriors play as well. They're, you know, just kind of similar to the Hawks. They're very team-oriented. They're there's not much selfish play. Now, Steph Curry, they do have a go-to scorer, unlike the Hawks. Steph Curry can, you know, break defenses down. He has one of the best handles in the league, and he's obviously an amazing shooter. You talk about Kyle Korver having, you know, the best shooting season in history, while in percentages that's probably going to be true. You know, Steph Curry, I still think, is a better shooter, in my opinion. It's just that a lot of his shots are contested. And then you have Klay Thompson, roughly equivalent as a shooter. So you have great shooting and, you know, a lot of unselfish play and good passing on that team. I think they have to be considered the favorite, but this West is loaded. We'll get into some other teams here too. So any other comments on the Warriors or the Grizzlies?
Well, you know, I would say that, you know, the Warriors or the Grizzlies do have the personnel, I think, capable of kind of slowing the Splash Brothers down. I mean, not completely, but, you know, again, that's another thing to consider when you're looking at how these two teams possibly match up is, you know, if you can slow down Curry and or Thompson enough and then do enough bruising on your own in the front court when you have the ball to you know, maybe make the games a little uglier, I guess is the best way to describe it. I think that's how you win that series. And I was just looking over the schedule. The Grizzlies play Golden State still 2 more times this year, so it'll be really interesting to see how those teams kind of match up in those games as a potential Western Conference preview. But, you know, if I had to bet money right now, I would say that that's the likely matchup we're looking at. But, again, in the Western Conference, who the heck knows? I mean, either of these teams could lose in the first or second round, and it wouldn't be completely mind-blowing, you know?
Well, yeah, especially if one of them is probably going to have to play the Thunder. The Thunder, I think, will make the playoffs unless there's some sort of injury issue. I mean, obviously, they've had their fair share of injuries, but if they're relatively healthy from here on out, the Thunder will probably be the 8th seed, in my opinion, but they could get up to the 7th seed. Either way, they'll play Memphis or Golden State in all likelihood. And, you know, if it's Oklahoma City, Golden State, that's probably the best matchup on paper, first round in the history of the league, possibly. I mean, I would have to really look into that, I suppose. But I'm just going to throw that out there. And
yeah, I think you're right. I think you're probably right. It's one of those weird seasons where the stars are kind of aligning in terms of the injuries or whatever. But imagine being the Warriors and fighting through this entire season and, you know, putting together pretty much a dream season. And, you know, look who you got to face in round one. The reigning MVP, maybe the best point guard in the league, 2 of the best 6 players in the league. You know, that, you know, some prize for your hard work, you know?
Yeah, it's pretty unfair. But that would be the Charles Barkley live by the jumper, die by the jumper special there, the Thunder Warriors.
Yeah.
he mentions that, you know, probably like 10 times per TNT broadcast when the Thunder are involved. But, yeah, the Thunder, yeah, obviously, there's no way you can count them out in that series. Because, again, what you said, they have 2 of the best, you know, 5-6 players in the league. And, you know, Ibaka, you know, let's talk about the Thunder for a second. The Ibaka has been, you know, a little disappointing, actually, I think.
Not great this year.
Yeah, he hasn't really progressed. Because, you know, that core group of 4 that they had originally, now Harden's obviously with the Rockets. The other 3 guys have progressed, I think, a lot more over the past few seasons than has he. His offensive game has really stagnated. The defense, the block shots are still there, but, you know, it is disappointing. He's kind of like a semi-stretch 4 for the most part, but I was hoping that there would be more development in terms of, like, his post game and, you know, face up on off that from the elbow, that type of stuff. But it really hasn't developed as much as I would have thought.
Yeah, I mean, he shoots almost 4 threes a game. And honestly, if you have Durant and Westbrook out there, you don't need him hanging out around there also. You need him to be more of a banger down low, especially because, you know, the rest of their front court isn't anything special. Are you off the Dion Waiters train like Bill Simmons and Zach Lowe are? Because they both loved that acquisition, and now I think they're both kind of souring on it.
Well, I don't think I was ever on the Dion Waiters trade. I think I liked it more for
okay.
Cleveland. But, yeah, I mean, I thought it was maybe, you know, something that he could potentially be a spark for them. But I don't really like him playing as much, you know, with those other guys. I think if he's, like, you know, basically off the bench, you know, as a spark, he could potentially do that well. But he's, you know, a very selfish player. He's not a good spot-up shooter, which I think you would like to have with those types of players from the shooting guard position. So, no, I'm not too in favor of Dion Waiters with that team. And it's kind of weird because now Jackson doesn't really play much because of Waiters.
Nah, and he wants out of there also, doesn't he? He pretty much said, yeah, I want to be out of here. I mean, I don't get why Oklahoma City would bring him in. If the biggest issue that he had in Cleveland was that he couldn't coexist with elite scorers around him because he was selfish, like you said, why did the Thunder think bringing him in would be any different when he's got to coexist with two elite scorers? You know, so I didn't really get the trade either. I'm kind of with you. I thought for some reason you liked it, but I guess maybe I misheard or something like that. So for that, I apologize. But, Thunder, Golden State, and San Antonio, Memphis, I mean, that's a joke. I mean, those series are complete jokes. Those should be Western Conference Finals type series, and instead they're going to happen in round one. So if you ever thought about getting into the NBA, do it right now for this final stretch where basically two of New Orleans, Phoenix, and Oklahoma City aren't even going to make the playoffs. And then, enjoy the postseason because it's going to be phenomenal basketball.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, I don't think I panned the Waiters trade for the Thunder. I just wasn't, like, all on board with it. And I think I was hoping his role would be a bit different, like I explained. So, Rockets, the team that you picked before the season, because obviously you were banking on the analytics of Daryl Morey there. So,
I like the roster construction.
Yeah.
That was the big reason I was in on him. But it obviously, you know, I mean, hey, what did I say the record was right now? I mean, they're still a really good, they're 36-17. So it's not like it's completely blown up in their face. But their biggest issue is, you know, again, they're probably not going to have a home court first round series, especially with Howard being out. And so they're going to be staring down going on the road in the first round against an elite team. And, you know, if Howard's not healthy and Harden has had some warts in the playoffs, it doesn't look terrific. But, you know, the reason I like them is you know, because of how they put a lineup together. They kind of felt like, well, we've got Harden as the elite scorer. We'll put in, you know, some great defensive players with them, and Howard, Beverly, and Ariza, who I loved on Washington and also liked when he was back on the Lakers. I thought that was a great signing, and I just kind of felt like it would all sort of come together in this one beautiful sort of picture. And I like the Josh Smith pickup, which now with Howard out, looks like it's really going to help them. But, I'm off. I was on, I'm off.
Yeah, so, I mean, Harden having an MVP caliber season for sure. And, you know, they have some good defenders, Patrick Beverly, most notably. And, you know, Reeds is a good defender, a solid all-around player. But, you know, with the issue with Dwight Howard right now, I think they talked about this on the Grantland NBA show recently, or the Trade Value show, one of those shows. And, you know, the question was basically posed, is Dwight Howard ever going to be, like, the Dwight Howard that we, you know, that was from the Magic ever again? Is he ever going to be even particularly close to that? And I think they pretty much said no on the show. And I would agree with that at this point because, you know, it's just too much of an accumulation of injuries at this point. And he's no longer particularly young. And, you know, he was a guy who really, really relies on elite athleticism. He's actually not even that tall. So, you know, you make fun of Bill Russell's height all the time, but Dwight Howard's not taller than Bill Russell. Just let you know, Dwight Howard, not taller than Bill Russell. But elite athlete, you know, super muscular, but now he's not quite as an elite athlete as he once was. And, you know, the offense, the skill level never really evolved in terms of, like, post moves and so forth. I mean, he's okay, but he's not, you know, a team down there. So, yeah, I just kind of question, you know, what he's going to bring to this team once he comes back, and then obviously long-term, his future.
Yeah, I mean, the injuries are definitely a concern. He's going to be, what, 29 this year or something? So definitely getting up there in age. And you're absolutely right. He is not an elite offensive center. I'm pulling up his nifty little player page right now. I mean, 16 points, only 11 rebounds. I mean, oh, my goodness. Yeah, he's fallen off. I mean, when he was in his prime, he was doing, you know, 14 boards a night, 3 blocks a night. And, you know, in his actual prime, he was doing, you know, over 20 points a game. And that's all kind of fallen off a cliff. Now, the scoring I can kind of see just because, you know, he is playing with James Harden, who will take the majority of the shots. But he's certainly a shell of his former self. And you can't be happy about getting hurt again and kind of seeing, well, how much is this going to affect him in the long run? It's tough to really say with any sort of conviction that, yeah, he will be the cornerstone of a championship team. And I thought coming into this year playing with Harden and having a reason Beverly there that, you know, he would not have to be an elite superstar, but he would have to be better than this. And the fact that he hasn't been and that he's hurt again, like you said, it definitely makes me question what sort of player he's going to be going forward.
Yeah, so I think his time as a top 5 or even 10 player is over. He might not even be a top 20 player going forward.
He's out of the top 10. I mean,
yeah, for sure.
You could list, if you were just a casual NBA fan, you could list 10 players better than him, I think. If you're a Houston fan, because you're stuck with this guy, you just got to kind of hope. I mean, if he ends up falling off a cliff, you know, he turns into another Amari contract in New York, which we can also talk about if you want, where he's just kind of playing out the strand and you hope you can get from him whatever you can. Now, I think he'll be better than Amari's been for the Knicks, but you know, you can kind of see maybe a few parallels there, especially when you talk about the injuries.
Yeah, potentially. But we only have about 7 minutes left, so I think we can skip Amari, unless you want to get into a big conversation about him bathing in red wine. I mean, I know that's, you know, a fascinating topic.
No, I mean, I do have to pick up enough for the Mavericks. You know, he has a, you know, solid amount of front court depth for them, but Dallas is another team that, you know, if they end up running into a buzzsaw in round one, I mean, Dallas could be, you know, a 2 or 3 top team in the East, but unfortunately, geographically, they're in Texas. But, yeah, that contract blew up in the Knicks' face. The Melo contract's going to blow up in their face, and
no,
that's all we need to say about the Knicks.
Yeah, Dallas, it's an okay move. I mean, he can obviously still score defensively, not bringing much to the table, though. They do need a big body. But I don't think Dallas is much of a contender, really. You know, I don't think this Rondo trade has really worked out tremendously well. I would just say right now, from the West, there's like 5 teams that I think have, you know, legitimate chances. And then there's, you know, some other teams that you that could go on a run. It wouldn't completely shock me. But the 5 teams are the Warriors, Grizzlies, the Spurs, the Thunder, and I'll actually say the Trailblazers would not completely shock me.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think Portland's biggest question mark is going to be how well Aldridge can survive with this thumb injury. I mean, it looks like he's going to play it out for, what, they said he was going to miss, what, like 2 months or something? And then he said, eh, never mind, I'm going to play. So I don't necessarily know how that works, but with Lillard and him, I don't know what's going on with Batum, but if he can, you know, improve on how he's played this year, Portland's going to be a really, really tough out as well. So I would agree with those 5. Notice you left your boys, the Clippers, out, but
that's probably partially because of the uncertainty surrounding Blake Griffin, I assume.
That's part of it. I mean, they would be the next team for me, but another issue is just at the wings, they're pretty weak. You know, J.J. Redick's is a good role player. Barnes is, you know, not quite what he once was on either side of the ball. And then, you know, you have Jamal Crawford who can come in to play the one or the two. And then what else really is there? Now you've got Austin Rivers. I mean, that's a joke. So it's just not much going on there. And I think you're going to need better wing players generally, you know, to get through the playoffs, considering some of the players that you're going to have to probably go up against. And, you know, basically Chris Paul, Blake Griffin, and DeAndre Jordan. And after that, the roster just drops off dramatically, and there's not a lot of depth. So that's my issue there.
Here's a question for you. Can you in any way at all see the Clippers falling out of the playoffs? Right now, in the loss column, they are 6 games ahead of Oklahoma City and 7 games ahead of New Orleans and 5 games ahead of Phoenix, who's currently in 8th.
I think it's pretty unlikely, very unlikely, I should say. The issue is, I think the Thunder will obviously make the playoffs. The Suns are not playing particularly good basketball now. Alex Len sprained his ankle recently. And, you know, I don't see the Suns being six games or better than the Clippers during the rest of the season. Again, we're only talking about like 30 games left in the season. So, actually a little less than that for the Clippers, 28 games. So, that's 6 games is a pretty big margin. I think Chris Paul and
Cliff Paul, the assist king, State Farm.
Yeah, and Cliff Paul there, the assist king. You know, along with DeAndre Jordan and, you know, that, you know, pretty much rag team that they have around those guys is good enough to win a fair amount. There's a lot of anti Chris Paul stuff going on right now, but he's still an elite player in my view. And I think he's going to do enough to keep this team, you know, afloat before Blake comes back.
I do love those DeAndre Jordan 27 rebound games. Those are, I mean, does anyone else even try to box him out? That's incredible. Almost Wilt Chamberlain-like, but
Or
Bill Russell-like. I agree, they're not going to fall out of the playoffs. I think you're probably right in that Oklahoma City will end up passing Phoenix. And New Orleans and the Suns will be very, very good teams, unfortunately, watching the playoffs at home.
Yes, so we're almost out of time here. You want to just say who your MVP is right now?
Right now, Harden by a hair, but I think by the end of the season, Curry is going to end up being the best player on the best team. And so if it comes down to any sort of tiebreaker, and they're close statistically, I'll give it to him just because of how awesome Golden State has been. And he'll be the guy, I predict, ends up winning it when it's all said and done.
Yeah, it's so close right now, I think, between those two guys and Anthony Davis for me. Anthony Davis won't get consideration for many because he's on a lesser team. He doesn't really have much around him. If he was in the East, though, they would be a playoff team and then somehow he would get consideration. But those three it's very close to me. I would go with, you know, Harden a little over Curry in terms of from the more winning teams. It seems like, I mean, I can go back and forth on this, but Harden is carrying his team more so, especially now with Howard gone. And he's really, you know, put more effort into his defense. So he seems to be in better shape. I know Bill Simmons and Zach Lowe were talking about that recently. He must be in a lot better shape because last year he was hired to play defense, it seems like, based on how much he had to do on offense. But Anthony Davis is right there, though, too, for me. He's the best player in the league, I think. He's missed a few games, though, so that hurts his case. But I don't really hold it too much against him that the rest of his team sucks. So a few seconds here. Any last comments?
Do you give LeBron any shot at all to win the MVP this year?
I mean, they would have to go on a pretty epic run to close out the year, so slight shot.
Okay. No, just that this was a lot of fun. Thanks for having me on. I think the NBA as a whole is in a great place right now. A lot of great superstars that, you know, are very, very marketable. And combine that with just the talent being spread out
pretty much over the entire Western Conference. And once we get past the first round of the East, the playoffs are going to be great. And I can't freaking wait for the snow to melt and baseball to start and NBA playoffs and March Madness. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Agreed. Looking forward to it. Thanks for coming on, Brian. Had a good time. And thanks to those who have listened.
Thanks a lot. Looking forward to the next one.
All right. Sounds good.
All right. Bye.